Welcome to Black Armada Tales, an actual play podcast. My name is Josh Fox, my pronouns are he and him, and I will be GMing tonight's session of Last Fleet together with four awesome people. And they are, in alphabetical order, from the top of the alphabet.
Becky Anison, that's me. My pronouns are she and her. The character I will be playing will be Lieutenant Emily Loris, also known as Hellcat, and that's the Ares playbook. And her pronouns are she and her also.
My name is Ed Tomlinson. I'll be playing Dr. Tobias Roy, who has been a backer of your Kickstarter, Becky.
Oh, thank you, Tobias Roy.
We'll soon be featuring on the website. He is the Scorpio playbook, and our pronouns are he and him.
My name is Nick Bate. I'm playing the Taurus playbook. Commander Sam Buckley, Captain of the Hecate. We both use he, him pronouns. Is that everything?
Yes.
Yes.
For now. Date of birth, street address.
PIN number.
You're doxing yourself.
Sort code.
Hi, I'm Sue Elliott. I'll be playing Sonia Vega, the Gemini playbook, and our pronouns are she, her.
It's true. Dr. T. Roy is, in fact, listed here.
Oh, I love you, Ed. You're the best.
He's you know, he's keen for, you know, being a patron of the arts as well as sciences.
You've all got to do that now.
I didn't know you could do that. I'm going to do it now, though.
Kickstarter as your character. Well, no, it's only because we have a survey where we ask people what they want to be named as. When you get down to the hangar bay, Bachman's already there.
Yep.
And she is talking to your chief engineer. I think we just named Raquel.
Alagona.
Alagona.
Alagona, that's right. She's talking to Alagona. There are a couple of other engineers kind of standing nearby, just sort of, you know, that thing where a senior person's come round to the desks and everyone's kind of having to kind of look interested while they talk to whoever they want to.
Right. Okay. So they're my engineers, or our engineers.
They're your engineers.
Not Barkman's. Okay. Well, I'll stride over in her line of sight and snap off a salute. Is she talking or is Alagona talking?
I think as you approach, she is saying, you pulled off a hell of a job there, Alagona, and I'm going to make sure that you've got all the resources you need to repair this. Ah.
Yep. So I'll stride over and snap off a salute, but I won't say anything.
We're going to get confused again as to whether she should call you commander or captain in this situation. You really have confused me completely with this.
I think, I don't know what her state of mind is, but to me, it seems like on my ship, the respectful choice, even from a superior officer, would be to call me captain because it's my ship. She wouldn't be incorrect to call me commander, but it might send a slightly different message.
Okay, cool. Captain, I'm glad you're here. I was just talking to Chief Alagona about the damage to the ship. Seems like there's a lot to do here.
Yes, sir. We took quite a beating.
So I see. Your crew have done an admirable job. I mean to speak to as many of them as possible. I've already spoken to your captain of the Marines. I hear that he acquitted himself, well, near perfectly, frankly, in the circumstances. And I wanted to speak to your pilots as well. There are commendations to be handed out. They've done a great job.
Couldn't agree more, Admiral.
Well, perhaps you could take me to a room where we can debrief.
Sam will say, by all means, and gesture off the... He'll gesture off towards one of the pilots' briefing rooms off the hangar, so a nearby room, and give Alagona a nod as he follows the Admiral off.
Yeah, I think the Admiral says one last encouraging word to the Chief.
Yeah.
Before striding off to join you in the pilot's briefing room. As soon as the door is closed, she says, what the hell do you think you were doing?
I think Sam was already being a bit stiff. Like, the body language is a bit stiff. And I think it stiffens further when she says that. And he looks forward, kind of military straight, so not quite at the Admiral, and says...
She's looking right at you.
Yes, like, yeah, yeah.
Right at you.
And I think he says, we needed that fuel, Admiral. We went and got it.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. At incredible cost. Your ship is damaged. People have been killed. I understand there has been a Korax incursion on the ship. All of this could have been avoided. We could have brought Agamemnon. We could have done this together. We could have done it right. You didn't think that it would be wise to consult with me first. You didn't think it would be wise to involve me.
Up until now, up until that question, I think Sam was going to say, I made a command decision and I stand by it. But she's asked me, I wasn't expecting her to ask that. And so I think Sam turns to her and he actually looks at her, looks her in the eye and says, trying to decide how honest Sam's going to be about what happened there. He'll say, Admiral, it may not have been my most carefully planned action, but I don't think we had the luxury of time. And this way we risked only the Hecate, not the entire fleet. I stand by my decision.
She exhales, turns away from you and kind of looks at the wall for a moment, and then revolves back round to face you, standing straight upright, and she says, it was a foolhardy decision and a foolhardy action. We could have lost one of our most important military vessels. We could have lost the fuel as well. You were out of line. It's not acceptable, and I won't tolerate that kind of behaviour. Now, as it happens, you've managed to return in triumph. There's been some very serious damage. Some lives have been lost, and you carried the can for that, and you will always have to remember that those people might have survived if you had used the proper chain of command. So, this is what's going to happen. You're going to smile, and you're going to look enthusiastic when I pin a medal on you tomorrow, and on some of your senior officers. But if you do anything like this again, you are on the thinnest of ice with me. I will bust you down so fast you won't be able to blink. Am I understood?
So during this, Sam has stiffened up again and turned so that he's no longer looking at her. He's looking straight ahead. And he'll just say, yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Not one more time, Captain. Now I have an appointment with your CAG, and I don't mean to miss it. And she just walks straight out.
I think...
Oh, God.
Sam probably stands there in exactly that same pose for quite a long time.
I thought you got away with it.
Could have been rougher.
Could it have been rougher?
Like... I thought I was about to get... I don't think there was going to be a next time.
Got a medal out of it, for goodness sake.
No, she's giving him a medal, but like he's going to have to wear that medal, knowing that actually that medal represents all the people he foolishly got killed.
Yeah, this is a good point.
That's why it's so awful.
You can't make an omelette without breaking eggs, that's what I say.
You weren't saying that when I shot your engines out.
No, well, you just messed up my master plan. Now I'm going to have to come up with a new master plan.
He was just getting ready to make an omelette and you ruined it.
I was breaking some of my own eggs.
That's the trouble where these metaphors, you know.
Yeah.
It's like two. What happens when two omelettes smash into each other at high speed?
The immovable egg and the...
You get broken shell in the omelette and then it's...
Is there one pool of eggs or has everyone got their own eggs? Like, what kind of egg is it?
Yeah, so one person thought they were making a vegetarian omelette, the other one...
Thought they were making a vegan omelette.
Surely we're making mushroom omelettes here.
Ha ha!
That's what you did there.
I see what you did there, I like it. I think they probably taste like shiitake mushrooms.
I'll tell you when I finally cook one up.
That's what's in the secret lab. It's just a little omelette pan. So I think we are owed a tea break between Dr. Roy and Sonia. Let us frame the tea. Now, the tea is not going to be at Spanners, I fancy.
So that was one of my questions, right? Is there any luxuries on this ship at all? I was thinking, oh, we'd have a nice, you know, swanky meal at the fancy restaurant in the ship.
Like a 10 forward kind of deal. But
no, I don't think there's anything like that. But I think, that's the Nexus, right? That's what the Nexus is. It's black market. So there's bound to be stuff out there that you can get if you're willing to pay the price to the right person.
But that would mean I'd have to cook dinner.
Maybe if you pull the right... Maybe you can get a chef.
A black market chef. An illicit chef.
Maybe you get a takeaway from Spanners.
Is Spanners really the only option?
Well, there's going to be a mess. And there'll probably be an officer's mess.
It's the end of the world. But this is the last remnant of humanity being pursued across space by the Korax. There isn't an ivy here.
All right, but there's no reason to not be civilized about these things.
No, but there's probably somebody who's a decent cook who, like, I reckon out on the civilian bits of the fleet, there probably is somebody running a restaurant. It may not be the best restaurant ever because they've not got the ingredients that you would want for the best restaurant ever, but there's probably someone who's got good cooking skills and who is hustling hard to get stuff like that, so why not?
Okay. All right. Whatever that it looks like, a small...
I thought this was a cup of tea. This has turned into, like, a swanky dinner.
This is Dr. Tobias Roy. Cups of tea. Cups of tea, I don't understand. This has got to be a grandiose gesture of impressing your journalist so that you get good stuff written about you.
All right, Dr. Tobias Roy, you better tell us where this swanky restaurant, or at least moderately nice restaurant, is.
So I think it's a modest restaurant. Like, you know, sort of like these sort of minimalist Japanese restaurants you get with like a bar, and it's got quite simple sort of booth layouts, but only a few. So only a few people can get in there, and they do like nothing too spectacular, but it's got a nice sort of relaxed private feel about the restaurant in a sort of very simple way. That makes sense?
It does. What kind of ship is this on? I was starting to think maybe like a cruise liner that's been repurposed, which still has its luxury restaurant.
Yeah, I guess, because it wouldn't be this military place. So we're going to have to jet across to a different ship. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Like on a little shuttle.
Okay.
That's cool.
It needs a name.
Pliers. No.
Shakademus.
What about something like Tribute? Like, we've got a bunch of Greek stuff going on.
Not the best restaurant in the world.
It's just a tribute.
Just a tribute.
I was going to go with Lotus. Let's go with Lotus because I've mentioned White Lotus. That's in my mind.
Lotus is the ship or the restaurant?
Oh, the ship. Flip. Tribute.
Okay. Fine. For some reason, the ship's called Tribute.
No, well, they've got to have Greek names, right?
They have to. It's just the theme.
Tycon.
Fine. So you're on the cruiser, the Tycon, in the Lotus dining suite.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm wearing some loose fitting casual gear. Not my usual scientific outfit, obviously.
Have we travelled over together, or are you there when I arrive?
I'm there when you arrive. I think I'm looking out. Is there a window? I'm thinking too much like Star Trek.
Nice window booth. Very nice.
I mean, I would think that you put your swanky restaurant
near a window
in a place that has a view.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I'm standing with my arms behind my back, looking, you know, thoughtful, pensive, looking out the window. Not like I've thought about this. This is just my natural stance.
It's an excellent choice, Doctor. I've heard good things about Lotus.
It's simple, but it does make some of the best food in the fleet. Welcome. We have a table, Miss Vega. Can I call you Sonia?
Please do. Yes.
Okay.
So Sonia gets comfortable. I think Sonia's gone for a slightly more casual look as well, although still quite tailored, like a kind of, you know, a nice tailored shirt, you know, pair of slacks, maybe like a cheeky pair of trainers or something.
Very casual for Mr. Roy, Dr. Roy, that is.
So she's just sort of perusing the menu a little bit. And while she's looking at the menu, she says, I'd quite like to apologise to begin with, Doctor. I understand it must have been quite jarring, you know, to find me in your lab. Having broken in, I admit that. I did break into your lab.
I think he looks a bit surprised, like he raises his eyebrows.
I was worried for my life, but I realise it must have been a violation and I would just hate for us to get off on the wrong foot. So if you could accept my apology, I think that would mean a lot to me.
Well, I would say I appreciate your honesty, but breaking into my lab, trying to escape, is probably ill-advised, given some of the specimens. You don't need to break into my lab to find out about me. You just have to ask me. I'm an open book, Sonia. Now is the time to ask.
An open book? Yes. Well, I'd love for you to take the lead on this, really. I mean, I'm a novice when it comes to scientific research. What would you like to communicate to people?
I'd like to reassure them that they're in safe hands, that they have one of the greatest minds looking into this problem of identifying Korax. I want to reassure everyone that I'm working extremely hard to find a way of identifying Korax and also to communicate with them potentially to find out what they really want.
Well, that's a big step, Doctor. Has that ever been attempted?
Let's just say I'm working on something which may prove fruitful.
I really want to make a roll. Fruitful, yes. I want to make my personal touch roll.
Ooh, mm-hmm.
Please.
A playbook move.
Yep.
Yes, let me just get the right page. When you give someone your undivided attention and make them feel special, roll plus smooth. And if I succeed, I get to ask them a question.
So what are you doing to make him feel special?
I am hanging on his every word. I'm just letting him just take the lead. He's obviously a guy who likes to be in control. I'm laughing in all the right places.
Can I ask, if I do this, can I also use reach out? I suppose you can't overlap on the moves, can you?
No, you definitely can.
Okay.
You do need to hit the trigger for reach out, obviously. Which is to do with sharing your
significant hope? That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's significant to you, sure.
Do you want to roll yours first?
Yeah.
What are the possible consequences of your one?
The possible questions are, what has been troubling you lately? What do you most need at the moment? What secret have you been holding on to? What do you most care about? And how can I touch your heart? Success, I get to ask one of those. And also, the doctor gets to erase a pressure.
Oh, sweet.
Nice. I don't think he's the one that really needs it.
Oh, I'm so relaxed right now. It's ridiculous.
Yes, it is not obvious to me which move kicks off first. I think it makes sense to me that Sonia's move goes first, though.
So, I rolled 8 altogether. So I'm going to ask, what secret have you been holding on to, Dr. Roy?
Okay. Well, I lower my voice conspiratorially and pour us a glass of wine. And I say, I have been hearing from the Korax. I believe I can understand them. I believe that they have chosen me as their conduit and that I may be able to resolve this crisis through diplomacy. How's that for hope?
Wow.
He said all the things. He said all of them.
All of them.
He didn't say all of them, but he did say quite a lot of them.
Just, yeah.
I mean, maybe they are reaching out to me. That doesn't make me a Korax, right? Maybe they recognise my superior intellect. That's all I'm saying. That's my justification.
Sonia leans back and takes a big sip of wine.
Like, oh, mouthful. Yeah. Yes, I was shocked at first myself, but it's irrefutable.
And are you saying that you've done this, or they have come to you?
Well, it was an accident at first, but I believe they were reaching out to me from the very beginning.
Right.
Just think, this could be the end of the conflict.
I hope so. I hope so, Doctor. Have you told anyone else about this? Does the Commander know?
No. I'm not sure how Sam would take this situation, given his recent volatility, shall we say. Hmm. I will wait my time, and once I've got the proof I need, I'll present it in good time. But Sonia, you look trustworthy, and, you know, I'm reassured that together perhaps we can explore this, and you can write up my findings as I go.
Sonia hesitates for a second and then leans across and puts her hand on Dr. Roy's hand and goes, "You can trust me, Doctor. Just keep me updated, and we will make this the story of a lifetime."
And with that...
Can I roll my reach out?
You can roll it. Yes.
I think I've earned it.
Yeah, you worked hard for that one.
Play your character like a stolen car, isn't it? That's what they say.
Yeah, I do think that's a good principle for all characters of any kind. And this game does seem to be... Like, I might get it. If I do a second edition, it'll be Last Fleet, Stolen Cars.
Stolen Spaceships.
Warm. That's zero. 9. That's what happens. I get an XP.
You do get an XP.
So I've dinged my XP.
Ding, ding, ding. And...
Let me just have a look at the machine again.
You choose one of you who erases one pressure, and you increase your relationship with each other by one.
Yeah, you respond positively. Mm. Oh. Ask them if they respond positively.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said you've triggered it, because that I think up until that point, I wasn't quite certain whether that was a positive response or not. But
oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
So, Sue, does your move reduce pressure for Dr. R, or is that...
Yes, it does, yeah, because it was a partial success, so...
So, Ed, you're reducing pressure anyway. You can now choose whether to take another pressure.
Yeah,
or to take pressure off Sonia. Your choice.
Well, I mean... What's the reality here? Do you think I'm nuts, or do you think that there's some vague possibility that he might not be talking out of his... He might not be having some weird complex moment. That's, I suppose that's the decision.
That's a really good point.
If you're not reassured by it, then you wouldn't lose the pressure. If you are, then...
Sonia likely thinks that you're nuts at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, you know, she's absolutely going along for the ride.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll take the pressure off me then. And I look like Bill Bailey after he's eaten a little book of calm right now. In more ways than one, including the halo.
You got it down to zero?
Yep.
Wow.
Wow. Never happened in the history of Last Fleet.
I like to think that I helped with that.
Which bit?
I'm not sure if you did, you know.
Stopping me from fulfilling my destiny, you mean? That bit.
Stopping you from dying before you were able to get your pressure down to zero?
Mm-hmm. That's how you get your pressure down to zero, by just being blown up in space.
That's true.
So do I need to have a look at the levelling up? So I'm second level scientist.
Well, is there anything more you want to do in the scene before you start listing off all the lovely moves you could buy?
It'd be interesting to know what Sonia's response is. Is it like you would carry on talking about things and making some, like, so that's the major high point of the conversation. Do we have small talk after that? Do you make excuses and kind of get out of there reasonably quickly?
What's your response? Well, I mean, our food's just arrived, mm-hmm. but also maybe Sonia steers it back to kind of stuff that we can discuss better in public. So your legit kind of research, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Talk about a bit of gossip. Maybe talk about Sam and supposed relationship. Would people know about you two? It seems to be sort of common knowledge, but not common knowledge. It's like the worst kept secret on the ship. Is that true?
Do you think that Sonia Vega is going to be asking about me and Sam when she's talking to you?
No, but I might be asking about you and Sam.
It seems to me that people know. I think we kind of established that in setup, didn't we? That it's fairly.
There's
well
definitely conversations
understood.
On with other pilots about it, right?
Oh, yeah, among the pilots.
I think there's speculation. What do you think, Cap?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Becky, but I don't think anyone thinks we're in a relationship.
No, I don't think they do.
It's just about whether or not we fancy each other.
It's a sort of on again, off again, will they, won't they kind of thing kind of knows about.
More like will they, won't they, than on again, off again, I think.
Yeah, very much will they, won't they.
It's a moonlighting situation then.
I mean, we can't, right? There's rules.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Okay, yeah, sure.
There's rules, but...
Yeah, rules, schmules. Okay, yeah, so I discuss the speculation on those two for a while and then also discuss the speculation of Sam's relationship with the commander.
Admiral Bachmann.
Admiral, that's it. I can never get the bloody... And we talk about your wonderful medal. I mean, there's a lot we can try and cover, but I suppose we could pick up in other scenes because I kind of want to get to know her a bit. So I'm sort of trying to suss her out a bit as well during the course of this conversation. But I don't have a special move for that unless I can reach out with fungal tentacles.
You could just try talking and see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'm good at that. I don't want to take up all the time, that's all.
I think we should eke it out over multiple scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like thread it through the next few sessions like a stick of rock while everyone else is busy fighting Korax in the corridors.
Well, I'm kind of... I want to know what both Sonya and Roy do after that.
Mm.
Like, it feels like, right. Like Sonya's like, holy shit.
Yeah, like, he's just told you some serious stuff.
Right, and Roy's like, I'm on top of the world. I'm a dead set legend.
Yeah, there's no other mode.
Sonya goes and posts it to Reddit. Like, hey, Roy, guess what?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Sonya's good. She's someone who keeps her powder dry, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I say, obviously, everything that we discussed at the moment is in confidence until I've spoken to Sam myself about this matter. This is all just musings of a mad scientist. So he sort of brushes it off a bit because maybe he's said too much, maybe he hasn't, but he sort of put it in there just to see what happens with it. That's what he's thinking. So I think we politely part ways.
I think we've got a plan to because you've just said I'm going to be coming along with your investigation and stuff. So
yeah. So I'll be flying to the insert name of other ship here.
Which one, Agamemnon or Hecate? Agamemnon's the one where the sample is thought to
be. The Agamemnon then.
Yeah. And we could be going like straight there from lunch.
Yeah, I thought this was dinner.
Oh, both of you?
What, after we've been drinking loads of wine?
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll just take one of Professor Nutt's like special tablets to neutralise the alcohol and we'll be fine.
Thanks for listening to Black Armada Tales. We've been playing Last Fleet by me, Josh Fox. You can find information about Last Fleet and all the rest of our stuff in the show notes. If you like what we do, then we'd really appreciate it if you shared the podcast on social media or gave us a review, preferably a 5-star one, as that really helps people to find the podcast. See you next time. So, actually, I have an astrophysics question for you, Nick, because I have been looking at the James Webb Telescope website, or as they call it, the website. Ha 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 ha! So fucking funny. And I was like, oh, this is all amazingly beautiful. You know, why doesn't the sky look like that? And then I got to the bit where it says, oh, this is all infrared. And what I'm curious about is there any relationship between that stuff, those beautiful images, and like the light spectrum you should see in some circumstance? Like, because obviously with the whole space stretching thing,
I feel like you're on very thin ice right now, Josh. I can feel it cracking underfoot.
Nick's got a bit of a look on his face.
No, it's a thinking look.
I'm thinking about the cosmic microwave background radiation. I've been reading quite a bit about astrophysics, so I now have the dangerous level of knowledge where you think you know something but actually you don't. And my understanding is that because space is expanding, The light from the Big Bang has been stretched and stretched and stretched until it's the wrong wavelength for us to be able to see it. Now it's the wavelength that you'd be able to pick up with a radio antenna, and indeed that's how they discovered it. But anyway, I'm wondering whether the same principle applies to infrared versus visible light, and that maybe the reason why you have to use an infrared camera to look at these things is because it's been stretched.
Yeah, okay.
As much as...
Yeah,
or is it just that it's all invisible shit?
It depends what you're looking at, right? So the stuff that's like inside of our galaxy hasn't... There's not enough stretching inside of our galaxy for it to have made an appreciable difference.
Yeah, because it's only a few hundred light years away.
Yeah, it's not very far. And in fact, gravity dominates in locally rather than the stretching of space-time. Okay. Or the expansion of space-time. It's not stretching. But stuff that's... That absolutely happens to stuff that's very distant. So outside of our galaxy, other galaxies, it's been stretched. It's not the same wavelength it was when it was emitted from the source object.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, this is one of the ways in which you tell how far away something is. So if you're looking at a spectrum, which, you know, has a bunch of bumps where light gets emitted, if you know what's being emitted, you know what that spectrum should look like. But as it's traveling through space, it shifts because of that stretching. So one of the first things you do when you take a spectrum of a galaxy is you de-redshift it. You figure out how far away it is, what redshift it is away, to take out that effect.
I thought that was because it was accelerating away as opposed to the actual stretching of space, which I don't know how you would even distinguish between the two. But
those two, they're the same thing. Things are accelerating away from us because space is expanding.
So is it only because of that? It's never because something is actually traveling.
Everything has a... I still haven't done that lecture, have I? Everything has a peculiar velocity. So if you pick a distant galaxy relative to us, it has a peculiar velocity, which might be towards us or away from us or across our line of sight, or, you know, it could be anything.
Right.
But typically those peculiar velocities are just dwarfed by the expansion, which is the expansion of the universe, which means everything is moving away from everything else. Right.
That's very alarming. Really alarming to think about.
Have I told you about so not only is the universe expanding, it's accelerating.
Yes.
So those things moving away from us are moving away from us faster and faster. And
Assuming
nothing weird happens, this acceleration will continue until eventually everything in the universe is moving away from us faster than the speed of light. And that means that the light emitted from other things can never reach us. And so at some point in the far distant future, the whole universe outside of our galaxy goes dark. We can't see anything else out there, even though out there is full of stuff. And in that universe, if you're an astronomer sitting on Earth at that time, I mean, Earth won't be around, but whatever, sitting on a planet in that galaxy at that time, you can't in principle even get cosmology right.
Oh, this is the thing that Neil deGrasse Tyson was saying about.
Yes.
Josh just poo-pooed.
I didn't poo-poo.
You did poo-poo. He said, given what you've just said, Nick, what are we getting wrong about cosmology now?
Yeah, this is, of course,
because it's already gone and we didn't even know it happened.
This is the question it begs, right? What are we...
Yeah.
What are we missing because we can't see it?
That. I did poo-poo that.
Yeah, you did poo-poo that. And I was like, Neil deGrasse Tyson said that, but I'm sure you know more about physics than he does, Josh.
Well, it's just a small subcase of a much more general problem, which is like, how do you know anything? Like, you've only seen a small sample size of anything in the universe.
Even if
you never looked through a telescope, that would be true. So how do you know that, like, outside of your window right now, the world isn't kind of melting like candle wax? Well, you don't know.
It's the spider web problem.
There are things that you can do, right? You can simulate a universe, say. People do that now. And you can look for small-scale consequences of big-scale things where you can't see the big thing, maybe, but you can see the small thing. And then having run your simulation, it might say, we expect X small thing to happen. So then you look for the small thing, which implies the big thing.
That still implies that things outside of the what you can see work the same way as things that you
yeah,
can
that's
see.
Always going to be a constraint. Yeah.
And that I mean, that's why I think that's why I poo-pooed the Neil deGrasse Tyson thing, because it sounded a bit like he was sort of saying, ooh, what if it's all different where we can't see? Which is like, well, yeah, it could be.
Didn't say it like that, exactly like that.
You have to make some assumptions about that. He did say it just like that. And it was weird because he put on an English accent just to say that.
I think it's a kind of wild thought that you can't. It's interesting because we used to run a lab for, it's probably boring for everyone else, but
to make tiny universes. That would be amazing.
That would be good.
A bit Rick and Morty-ish.
It's a lab that we ran for like first year university astronomy students. And I'm going to get some details wrong, but in this lab, we posited that they were all scientists of varying different expertises on a planet that where the cloud cover never lifted.
Mm.
So you never saw the sky.
Bit like England. You should just have come here.
And there's a series of, and each of them has a series of observations that they can't explain with their understanding of what their world looks like. And the question you ask the students is, if you put all these things together, can you infer that they live on a spherical planet orbiting a sun?
Cool.
Well, that's not actually what we ask them. What we ask them is, what is the cosmology of this system? What does this system look like? And the correct answer is, of course, it looks exactly like ours. But it's always fun seeing students try to come up with like wacky alternatives for what the universe looks like that will explain all of these observations that these people have without you being able to look up and see stars and the sun and all that kind of stuff.
It's the assumption that the cloud cover is so thick that you can't even tell, there's no directionality to the light.
So, yes, exactly. You can tell that there is day and night in the sense that it gets lighter and darker, but it's diffuse enough. There's no sense in which you know there's a sun passing over.
So you can do it, can you?
You can do it, yeah. There's a series of observations about, like, for example, the you can work out the curvature thing with clocks. If you measure the point of peak brightness in the day here, and then you travel 100 miles that way, and you measure, and you look at your watch at the time that you think is the point of peak brightness, it won't be the point of peak brightness. That'll be a minute later or something. And that's because we live on a ball that is rotating.
Feels like it's tricky for you to then make that intuitive leap without some of the other things.
I mean, this is, there's two tricks for this experiment. Can they make the intuitive leaps from the data that they have? And can they forget the things that they think they know and only extrapolate from the data they have? Because you can cheat, of course, and just figure it all out.
Hang on. So you mean using out-of-character knowledge?
Yeah,
so you basically put them in a role-playing simulation.
It's 100% that. I mean, we give them characters. Nice. It's a role-playing game.
Oh, my God, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Do you get to play someone who has the same expertise you do, or do you have to play, like...
No, there's, like, geologists and...
playing a biologist.
Yeah, it's like that. Because you need to, you need somebody who can feed you the right kinds of observations. And then on top of it, just for fun, we throw in an Inquisition who aren't trucking with any of this
shit. Spanish Inquisition.
Holy shit, yeah. Nick.
What? The Spanish Inquisition? You have a Spanish Inquisition who come in and like take people away and torture them and tell them...
To recant their scientific disciplines.
Recant their science and all that
shit.
Shout
at them when they say things like...
Yeah, they have. There's an orthodoxy and this is not orthodox. And so we're not okay with it.
This is 100% a role-playing game. 100%. And you're just dressing it up like it's some sort of exercise for students.
Why
haven't
you
heck?
Just written that up with a 2D6 mechanic?
It's not my game. It was I never asked the guy who came up with it. It was a professor at Sydney if he plays role-playing games. Or if he just kind of invented role-playing games.
He either does play role-playing games or he'll be really sniffy and be like, role-playing games? Oh, what?
Yeah.
And he'll refuse to accept under any circumstances he is, in fact, a game designer.
Indeed. Yep. It's the Margaret Atwood.
It's the Margaret Atwood defense. Science.
What Neil deGrasse Tyson actually said was, what if there was something before the Big Bang, which is a scene to
remember.
No,
that's not what I said he said.
Oh, you didn't say he said that.
What I said he said was, imagine what we don't know today because we were never able to observe it before it left. What do we not know? Ah, and he said it keeps me awake at night. What is it that we don't know? Because
I bet you it doesn't.
It's already gone.
Just lying on his piles of money.
Yeah.
Pulling out wads of cash sticking in his back.
I met him once.
You met him?
You met Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Yeah, I met him once.
Is he tall?
Yes.
Yeah, he gives me the impression that he's tall.
Yeah, he's a big man.
He'd probably have nice legs and heels as well.
Never saw that. He was exactly as excited as he... The reason I met him is that I was working kind of just in a corridor at the American Museum of Natural History, and he walked past, and one of the people I was working with had an astrolabe sticker on the back of his laptop, and he got very excited because he had an astrolabe in his office, and so he wanted to show us his astrolabe. It's a big nerd.
That's quite nice. I thought he was excited to meet you.
I guarantee he would have no recollection of that. It's just one of 700 excited exchanges he had that day. I think.
That's just who he
probably is. Showed the astrolabe to 20 other people.
Yeah, probably 20 other people that day.
Yeah.